What do we do with the situation of the killing of an American citizen under the order that may not be constitutional? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Institute for Principles and Policy Executive Director Barry Sheets. And along with me, as usual, is my cohort and co-host, Chuck Michaels, our Vice Chairman.
And as usual, I'm very pleased to be here.
And we're pleased to have you because what we've been discussing this week has been a fairly labyrinthian and hairy subject, the killing of an American citizen by American government operatives on foreign soil, mind you, not on American soil. But we've had a firestorm over the last couple of weeks over the execution of Al-Qaeda operative Anwar al-Awlaki, who, by birth, who was born in New Mexico in 1971, is technically under the laws of the United States an American citizen, who then moved to Yemen, the country of Yemen.
Well, he fled to Yemen,
essentially. In order to take up militant acts against the country of his birth, the United States. Now, for those acts and for those things that he was involved in, including the attempts to blow up an airplane over Detroit with a bomb in somebody's underwear, and it's not a laughing matter, but it is kind of funny when you say it that way. For his attempts to try to ship printers into the country that had bombs implanted in them so they could create havoc in certain sectors of our economy. Anwar al-Awlaki is a really bad guy, or was a really bad guy. He left this earth on September the 30th of this year when an unmanned drone plane that was controlled by the United States Central Intelligence Agency operatives found his convoy and destroyed his vehicle with him in it with missiles. The question we've been asking all this week is, how do you unpack this and not just lead into emotionalism or rampant patriotism on either side of the coin? Because we've seen both coming from the talk radio world. We've seen it coming from talking heads. We've seen it coming from our elected officials, both right and left, decrying this for one reason or the other. What we've been looking at this week is, how does it comport with our constitutional form of government, our rule of law, as spelled out in our organic law of this country, the Constitution of the United States?
Well, I would have less trouble with this if Anwar al-Awlaki, if that's the correct pronunciation, which who knows?
It doesn't really matter.
If he had been killed while attempting to evade capture, that's one thing. But direct assassination by the use of a remote-controlled device operated by an intelligence agency strikes me as at least extra-constitutional, and therefore illegal, if not downright thumbing its nose at the procedures outlined in the Constitution for bringing people like this to justice.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, again, regardless of how any of us feel about it, regardless of how patriotic we may be, regardless of how much we love our country, love our troops, and love everything about America, we won't have any of that to love if we don't adhere to the document that puts the boundaries upon our government. That's the beauty, that's the genius of the United States Constitution, in that our founders, God rest their souls, understood the intricacies of dealing with power and knowing that man's basic nature was not good and that our natural man seeks to consolidate power to himself. So in setting up our government, they broke it into various branches, and they gave each branch checks and balances over each of the other branches in order to have a leveling or a balancing effect. When we decide that we don't like how that operates, especially if the us in question is elected officials, and they decide to make it up as they go along or to walk outside the bounds of the Constitution and say, let's say the executive branch decides to take a legislative action, or the legislative branch decides to take a judicial action by issuing a bill of attainder, which they're bound not to do, as we saw from our Constitution. Or if the judicial branch decides to become the executive and try to run the executive branch of the country, we have a jurisdictional confusion, which leads to, well, as one theologian one time said, when those jurisdictional boundaries are crossed and stepped on, the result's always a perversion. And that we have to be careful here that we walk through this constitutionally, so that we don't allow more perversion of our rule of law than may already have been the case by this particular action and the steps that led up to it.
Now, we've spent somewhere around an hour and 10 minutes basically trying to unpack that. Now, normally it doesn't take that long. You can follow these things, but you really do have to think about them. You have to think about the way these rules for the operation of government intermesh with one another, how the different departments check and balance one another, to coin a phrase, I guess. No, actually, I stole it from James Madison. But the fact is that you cannot sit idly by and just take the word of people who are coming out and issuing defenses that say, well, the Congress passed a resolution and therefore the president has the power to do such and such and so and so. The Congress has no power to slough off its own authority onto the executive branch. It cannot do that. There is no provision in the Constitution, and if there's no provision in the Constitution, that means the power is forbidden for them to just hand over the power to the executive branch. The executive branch is supposed to be responsible to the legislature for the carrying out of the specific activities that it assigns them.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had also talked about earlier that this may have been done under a treaty aspect in relation to our relationship maybe with the country of Yemen, because Article 6 of our Constitution talks about that our Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and that's a key phrase, in pursuance thereof, that basically all of our laws have to be within the bounds of our Constitution. So when our Constitution says no bill of attainder ex post facto law shall be made, and it's in our Article 1 under our lawmaking duties, no bill of attainder ex post facto law shall be passed. That's a bounds on the extent of the laws of the United States. Now, it says that all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. Now, we've got a number of different takes on this. It says anytime we sign a treaty and the Senate approves it through their constitutionally required action on it, then it becomes the supreme law of the land, and it's over everything, including the laws of the United States and the Constitution. But you see, you have to unpack that. It can't be, because it's made under the authority, and that letter is capitalized. And we talked earlier this week that when our founders wanted to bring home a point, they use capitalization because the whole idea of italics hadn't really come up very heavily in 18th century grammar. So they used capitalization, made under the authority of the United States. Well, in order for us, these states, to be united, it was under this Constitution. The authority is the Constitution itself. The Constitution and the laws are made in pursuance thereof, and the treaties have to be made in pursuance of that. So for our president to sign and our Senate to ratify a treaty that violates the Constitution and the laws of the United States, it's no law at all. It's not the supreme law of the land. So no matter what happened there, as we've unpacked this week, even if it were a treaty that were signed to say, go get them, tigers, it would violate the standards of our Constitution. It would violate the right of Congress in Article 1 to declare war, and to issue letters of mark and reprisal. It would violate our Article 3, Section 3 provision that only the courts a court of competent jurisdiction, whether it be the United States Supreme Court or others, and it ultimately would go to the Supreme Court on an issue of treason, that the Supreme Court can are the only ones who can find somebody guilty of treason. And it's only for two certain limited things, declaring war directly or aiding and comforting and the enemies of the United States, or basically, as it says, adhering to the enemies and giving them aid and comfort. Those are the only two things that you can be declared, you can be found guilty of treason for. And it's only the court that can do that. The president can't do it, and the Congress can't do it, because they can't issue a bill of attainder. They can't write a bill that makes somebody treasonous.
And you can't say it's a casualty of war when there's no war declared. And in fact, the treaty, if there is a treaty involved or some kind of an international agreement involved that isn't pursuant to the Constitution, is not a legal document.
Now, folks, the reason why we're bringing this up, and if you stayed with us all this week, I'm glad. If you're here for the first time, I'm glad too. And I hope that you stayed with us, because we really are getting down to this point. And this is the point. We have a written document that spells out how our government is to operate and the limitations it must remain under for our liberty to continue to exist. If we are to allow, as a people, our government to throw off, as Thomas Jefferson called it, the chains of the Constitution, we will have tyranny. Now, I'm not being bombastic about this. If we have a small panel, a subset of a bureaucratic agency called the National Security Administration, which is under the auspices of the President of the United States as an executive branch office, researching, determining, and making a list of people who can be murdered, killed, assassinated, exterminated, executed, whatever word you want to use to make yourself feel good about it. If they can make a list of people that then is carried out by another executive branch agency, whether it be the CIA, the Justice Department, or the United States military acting under the auspices of the president as commander-in-chief of the armed forces, what is to stop them, since they've already gone outside the bounds of the Constitution, from saying that, well, we've done it with an American citizen on foreign soil, there's nothing to stop us from doing it to an American citizen on American soil? Because if I'm an American citizen and I go to foreign soil, whether I go willingly or not, whether I go in militancy against the United States or not, until a court has declared me expatriate, or I've renounced my citizenship officially, I still am under the laws of the United States, the Constitution and its laws made in pursuance thereof, just like we are here in the United States on American soil. If we allow our government to be able to cavalierly decide, because it meets a goal of theirs, whether it be a military goal, a political goal, or some other goal, to take somebody out who is an American citizen because they believe they're a bad guy, without going through the constitutional rigor of doing it the right way, all of our liberties are in jeopardy.
And that's exactly why the Founding Fathers wrote the document the way they did. This is a protection for the American citizen against the government. Now, I'm amazed at how many people I heard coming out and in praise of this thing and defending it on the basis of the congressional resolution who have now backpedaled. And I understand their arguments. It did look like maybe a letter of mark and reprisal to me at first. And then when I delved into it, it doesn't. And the fact is that this National Security Agency portion of this thing is absolutely frightening. It means basically that there's a death panel working inside the National Security Agency who's issuing attainders without any oversight whatsoever.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's the reason why we need to look at the principles before we approve the policies. That's why we're here, to help you to think through this and unpack it using the principles of our faith and of our Constitution, the only securities we have against tyranny in America. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more principles and policies.
Join us tomorrow at noon for the 1 hour show.